waste a day and spend the night underneath the sunrise. Show me where you love. Nim, can you just sit down? Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our full year 2019 results presentation, and of course to our wonderful new surroundings. Today is about how Legal in General is delivering inclusive capitalism, great commercial and economic results, but also benefits for society more broadly. The two go hand in hand for us. We worked this out almost a decade ago, and this is a programme of action for us on both fronts, inclusive and capitalism. By way of housekeeping, please switch off mobile phones. There are no planned fire drills, and the usual disclaimers apply to forward-looking statements. 2019 was another consistent year of strong performance for Legal & General, record-breaking in several key areas. Operating profit from divisions, excluding mortality release and excluding discontinued businesses, was up 17%. At 2.5 billion. Solvency II operational surplus generation was up 9% at 1.6 billion. EPS was up 16% at 28.66 pence, and ROE was 20.4%. Book value per share was up 9% at 156 pence. And the recommended full year dividend is 17.57p, that's up 7%. Jeff will take you through the financial numbers in detail. As an overview, all of our divisions perform well in 2019. These results are another step on a consistent journey. For almost a decade, we have delivered annual double-digit growth in operating profit from divisions, EPS and DPS. And our growth in book value per share has accelerated, reflecting the quality of our earnings, plus ROE rising from 14.9% to 20.4%. 2019 was another year of consistent growth for all five businesses. Since 2015, all have delivered growth in operating profit. LGRI delivered compound annual growth of 21%, LGIM 4%, LGC 12%, insurance 2%, and Retirement Solutions had the highest rate at 25%, overall 13%. In 2015, we set ourselves an ambitious goal of 10% compound growth in EPS for the five-year period from 2015 to 2020. We have achieved that goal with 58% growth in 4 years. So we'll be setting out our ambition for the next stage of our development later in the year. Our focus is twofold. Firstly, on large, often international markets where we have a small market share and can outpace market growth, like investment management. And secondly, growth markets where we have leading market share and can grow by retaining market leadership and expanding internationally, like PRT. That strategy is working for us. We've also entered a number of new adjacent markets successfully and at scale. For example, affordable housing and salary finance. Meanwhile, in 2019, we continued to sharpen our business focus by completing the sale of the General Insurance division for £255 million. We expect to complete the £650 million sale of the mature savings business in the first half of this year. New business in 2019 was similarly strong, building on sustained compound growth across all of our divisions. 47%, 23%, 35%, 5%, 31%, and 48%, as shown on the slide. We have no laggards. In pension risk transfer, LGRI delivered 11.4 billion, including significant international success. We are a global leader in this market, and our pipeline is strong. LGIM's external net flows of 86 billion is more than twice the equivalent in 2018. LGC's direct investment of 2.9 billion are another step forward. LGC is unique. As well as contributing to its own operating profits, it is a crucial part of our strategy to create alternative assets for the broader group and to deliver outstanding economic and social outcomes in housing, in energy, and in future cities. Insurance GWP rose to 2.7 billion. Again, we are a market leader. Competitive products, strong distribution, and fintech sit at the heart of LGI, which includes our intermediated mortgage business, which facilitated 78 billion of transactions in 2019. Retail retirement and LGRR delivered 970 million of individual annuity premium, and in a more competitive market, 965 million of lifetime mortgage advances. I'd like to thank all of our divisional CEOs, Laura Mason, Chris Knight, Kerrigan Proctor, Bernie Hickman, Claire Singleton, who is delivering the sale of mature savings, and Michelle Scrimger, as well as all of their colleagues, and indeed many of our advisors, for another stellar year. And to wish Michelle a speedy recovery from her ski injury. She is listening in today and has every reason to be proud of her business's performance. Our colleagues make Legal & General the success that it is today, and they operate within a collaborative and mutually reinforcing structure. LGC, LGR, and LGIM work closely together to create assets which deliver shareholder returns. We structure and or self-manufacture assets to support PRT business and to provide AUM to LGIM and to LGC. This model, which is built around positive and constructive collaboration, creates new asset classes and provides co-investment opportunities for our external institutional clients. And this combination of investing as a principal and as an agent is supported by the Solvency II capital advantages and technological leadership provided by LGI. Working collaboratively across our divisions has diversified risk, and it is these structural and capital synergies which result in our 20% ROE. These synergies remain unique in our sector and our industry. I'd now like to hand over to Jeff to take you through the numbers.
Thank you, Nigel, and good morning, everyone. This morning, I'm going to cover our 2019 financials on both a group and divisional basis, the management of our credit portfolio, the ongoing investment in LGIM, and lastly, our capital position and surplus generation. Looking to our group financial metrics, 2019 was a strong year for Legal & General, continuing to deliver value to our shareholders. Operating profit from continuing divisions was up 17% at £2.5 billion, with growth in all five businesses, demonstrating the quality of our diversified business model and the value of our focused long-term strategy. This growth rate is excluding a mortality release from LGR's annuity book. We've been able to make sizable mortality releases for the past 3 years because of our long-term assumptions about mortality were prudent against emerging longevity trends. In the second half of 2019, and in light of more recent mortality trends, we conservatively adopted an adjusted version of the CMI 2017 tables, resulting in a reserve release of £155 million. As usual, we maintain our cautious and staged approach to the trends we are seeing, and we will investigate a move to the next actuarial table, CMI 18, in light of 2019 population experience and the relevance to our book of lives. We'll provide an update or analysis later in the year. Going forward, all comparisons I make to prior year metrics will exclude these mortality releases unless otherwise stated. As I mentioned at our half-year results, we're making measured investments into our business in order to improve efficiency, drive growth, and comply with the evolving regulatory framework. For that reason, you'll notice investment project spend is up £60 million. The additional expenditure primarily relates to augmenting cybersecurity, upgrading the IT infrastructure, and preparation for IFRS 17. We expect this to reduce as these complete and move to BAU. Despite positive performance in equities and other asset classes over the course of the year, the overall result was a negative investment variance. In particular, LGI was again impacted by a fall in UK and US government bond yields, as we've seen in previous periods. However, we were still able to maintain profit before tax and EPS growth of 15% and 16% respectively. And Nigel has already covered the synergies that lead to a 20.4% ROE. Finally, the group's Solvency II operational surplus generation was 1.6 billion, up 9% from last year, and the coverage ratio for year-end was 184%. I'll cover our capital position in more detail later. So turning to our divisions, LGR's momentum has continued in 2019, with operating profit growing by 27% to £1.4 billion. This success was driven by the ongoing delivery of prudential margin releases from our growing back book, further helped by positive variances arising from routine updates to our mortality assumptions. Both our retirement businesses delivered solid growth. Our institutional business grew operating profit by 34% to £1.1 billion. For the second year in a row, the UK PRT market had record new business volumes, topping £40 billion in 2019. LGRI took roughly a quarter of total market volumes as we maintained pricing discipline, achieving Solvency II new business margin of 7.9% and capital strain of just 4%. Our retail business delivered operating profit of £298 million, up 5%, with annuity new business continuing to grow. As I said, LGRI had a fantastic year, writing more than £11 billion, a 21% increase. In the UK, we wrote £10.3 billion on a wide range of deals, including one of the largest pension buyouts for Rolls-Royce, an LGIM client since 1989. We are a trusted partner for pension schemes across their de-risking journey, and in 2019, we helped a number of plans meet their end goals, including the culmination of a seven-year de-risking journey for Hitachi. We also completed one of the first transfers from fiduciary management to pension buyout for a client. We are unique in having both these capabilities in our business, meaning we are well placed to help fiduciary management clients move to buyout over time. The UK PRT market opportunity remains vast, and we are continuing our development of capital-light PRT products. For example, in 2019, we wrote our first assured payment policy, which provides asset yield, interest rate, and inflation risk protection to pension plans, paving a more secure path to buyout over a planned timeframe. Many of these transactions benefited from LGIM's long-standing client relationships. Over the past 3 years, 51% of UK PRT deals have been from LGIM clients. There are also significant international PRT opportunities, and in 2019, we entered the Canadian market with a transaction through our partnership with Brookfield of over 200 million Canadian dollars. In the US, we wrote more than $1 billion for the first time as we started writing larger mandates. In retail retirement, we have delivered 24% operating profit growth annually since 2016. Our individual annuity sales increased 22% over the year, benefiting from our improved enhanced annuity proposition and increased broker presence. We added a fourth introducer arrangement in November with Prudential, which is expected to increase sales by 15% in 2020. Lifetime mortgage advances were down to £965 million as we maintained pricing and underwriting discipline in a competitive market. Despite stronger competition, we were still able to achieve a 25% market share, driven by our wide range of products and strong customer-focused brand. Our LGR asset portfolio, which is a source of long-term captive AUM for LGIM, has now grown to £76 billion, with 28% of the portfolio in direct investments, including lifetime mortgages. We have maintained high credit quality with two-thirds of our bond portfolio rated A or better and 17% in sovereign-like assets. The portfolio is well diversified by geography and sector. Only 22% of our bond portfolio is in UK-listed corporate credit, with many of these holdings being multinational companies with significant diversified overseas earnings. Our exposure to overseas issuers makes up nearly half of our portfolio, and we hedge our currency exposure to deliver matching sterling asset cash flows. We are thoughtful in our exposures to various sectors. As I have mentioned before, we have reduced our holdings in pro-cyclical sectors like banking, where our exposure is less than 5%. We have also avoided sectors which we believe are at risk of significant disruption, for instance, traditional retail and automotives, which together constitutes less than 2% of our portfolio. LGIM manages the portfolio to avoid downgrades and defaults, and has been extremely successful at this, realising less than £25 million of default losses in traded credit since 2007, whilst maintaining overall portfolio credit quality. As further protection, we continue to hold a substantial credit default reserve of £3.2 billion. LGR also has a diversified and high-quality direct investment portfolio, with stable income from high-quality counterparties, often additionally collateralised or secured. 15% of the assets are rated AAA, and approximately half of these are quasi-sovereigns, like HMRC and the Secretary of State. We added £4.3 billion of new alternative assets over 2019, and have had particular success financing internally generated new asset classes in build-to-rent and affordable housing, leveraging the experience and skills of LGC Homes and LGIM Real Assets. Again, and I know I stress this a lot, it's important to remember that our primary exposure in LGR's DI portfolio is to the counterparties, not to the properties. We recognise the influence our annuity investment decisions can have, and therefore we've been thoughtful about how to integrate sustainable principles into our asset strategy. We have made explicit commitments on overall carbon intensity in our TCFD publication. Across the group, we have sought investment opportunities to develop and commercialise decarbonisation technologies. LGR alone has made more than £1 billion of direct investments into renewable energy such as solar and offshore wind. We invest in assets like social housing and renewable energy because our pensions are for the long term and require long-term sustainable assets to back them. Now moving on to LGIM. Operating profit was up 4% to £423 million, reflecting increased revenues from flows and positive markets. As previously guided, this was offset by continued investment in the business, resulting in a cost-income ratio of 54%, which has increased marginally from last year. LGIM achieved record external net flows of £86 billion, representing 9.4% of opening AUM. Of this, international net flows were £59 billion and included a £37 billion Japanese passive inflow reported in the first half. This mandate leveraged our proactive ESG approach and provides LGIM Asia business with a platform for future growth. We also continue to see strong demand from a broad range of European customers, with flows of £11.6 billion, reflecting the continued focus we've placed on the region. Total AUM increased 18% to £1.2 trillion, with international assets accounting for 30% at £370 billion. UKDC had another strong performance, with AUM up 33% to £94 billion, maintaining its market-leading position. This includes £8.9 billion in our Master Trust, one of the largest and fastest-growing in the UK, reflecting its continued appeal to DC plans who outsource their governance, investment and administration to LGIM. Total retail AUM reached £39 billion. LGIM was ranked second on both gross and net UK retail sales in 2019, as we continue to experience high demand for our multi-asset and index products. As part of our ongoing change programme, we continue to invest in the business. To achieve the resilience and scalability fundamental to LGIM's future success and to generate operational leverage. Areas we are investing in include digital client portals, technology-enabled investment platforms, and international expansion, leading to efficiency and lower unit costs as we grow. Going forward, LGIM-related project expenditure, currently reflected in group expenses, will be allocated to the LGIM result. Rebasing the 2019 financials, would have resulted in a £29 million transfer of expenses, increasing LGIM's cost-income ratio from 54 to 56%. So £394 million is the base 2019 figure to start projecting from. To help you, in 2020, we expect the equivalent transfer from Group to be around £20 million of additional expenses. This allows better transparency and accountability of spend for management and aligns with the general practice in the rest of the group. And, just to emphasise, there is no impact on the overall group results. In LGC, operating profit increased 13% to £363 million. Within this, the direct investment portfolio delivered operating profit of £217 million, up 15%, with affordable housing delivering a profit in its first year of operation and existing assets performing well. Our diversified direct investment portfolio now stands at £2.9 billion, up 22%, as we added £500 million of new investments during the year across housing, future cities, and SME finance. Profit before tax was up more significantly at £454 million, driven by the relative performance of the internationally diversified portfolio of equities. Now moving on to our protection division, LGI. Operating profit was up 2% to £314 million, with the UK and US businesses collectively delivering stable growth and margins in highly competitive markets. The decrease in UK reported profits was largely due to a change in intra-group reinsurance of the US business, as previously flagged. Consequently, operating profit in the US was up £29 million to £91 million, primarily due to the same reinsurance change and a reserve release following improvements to the recently adopted IFRS methodology. This was partially offset by adverse mortality in line with experience across the broader US life sector. Total gross premiums were up 6% to £2.7 billion. The business continues to grow at good levels of profitability, with Solvency II new business value up 5% to £216 million. Looking forward, we expect continued stable earnings and premium growth in our leading UK and US businesses as we invest in technology, enhance our product offerings, and strengthen our distribution relationships. Moving on to our capital position. At the end of 2019, the group's Solvency II surplus stood at £7.3 billion, and our coverage ratio was 184%. Despite recent market volatility, our balance sheet remains well capitalised and resilient. As at the end of February, the coverage ratio was estimated at 174%. We have consistently demonstrated a rigorous approach to risk and capital management. Since 2016, it is worth noting we have maintained solvency while paying a progressive dividend, investing in new PRT, and navigating market volatility. We have bridged the Solvency II surplus to help explain the movement during the year. As we said, operational surplus generation from the back book was £1.6 billion. There were a number of well-understood movements as well during the year. Among them, the non-economic impact of lower interest rates on the valuation of our balance sheet was largely offset by positive equity market returns and other market movements. And the mortality release, model refinements, and management actions led to positive operating variances. Net surplus generation was £1 billion, even allowing for record new annuity volumes. We will, of course, remain disciplined in the deployment of our surplus capital to ensure we meet or exceed our return targets and remain within our risk tolerances. So, to conclude, we achieved record PRT volumes and asset management flows in 2019, with all our businesses producing a good financial performance and double-digit growth in key group metrics. Notwithstanding volatile markets, we have a strong and robust balance sheet, and this remains the case. OSG and earnings continue to grow attractively as we execute, giving us optionality to invest in new business. The synergies between our businesses are a unique source of competitive advantage, and we have again achieved a return on equity of around 20%. Thank you. I'll now hand back to Nigel.
Thank you, Jeff.
Turning now to our outlook, we will remain focused on delivering inclusive capitalism. Economic impacts, commercial success, and the socially useful outcomes which give us long-term sustainability. These are not new themes for us. For example, Sasha and his team have been long-term pioneers of stewardship, active engagement, and ESG investment. Our thinking is now becoming mainstream. Equally, we have led in creating real asset investment outside London, the process now known in government as levelling up. We've invested in 15 cities to date, including Edinburgh, Newcastle, Leeds, Salford, Manchester, Bristol, Cardiff, with many more to follow. And more than any other institution, we've responded commercially to the ageing demographic. Having led the process of change in many areas, and we are delighted others are following, we will accelerate our pace of change. Our six macro growth drivers are more relevant today than they have ever been. Markets are coming to us. The aging demographic almost everywhere illustrates the scale of market opportunities. If retirees globally were a country, it would be the third largest economy in the world behind the US and China. PRT and individual decumulation markets will continue to grow. And in the US, we are growing our capacity to execute larger PRT transactions. Across the markets where we operate, there are more than 5 trillion of DB liabilities. LGIM has just 1.7% of global market share for AUM. In 2018, total global AUM was $74 trillion and is forecast to grow to $101 trillion by 2023. The UK DC total market AUM is expected to more than double to $955 billion by 2028. The switch to DC is key to UK welfare reform. And we have built quality products and a trusted workplace brand with more than $90 billion of AUM. The next step will be to enable better investment outcomes for millions of ordinary pension savers, including modest allocations to new asset classes, such as infrastructure, build-to-rent housing, and venture capital. Decades of underinvesting in the real economy needs correcting. And we are in a strong position in UK housing, urban regeneration, infrastructure, and climate change. Cala Homes now have revenues of over £1 billion. That's four times the size when we first invested. And we're growing fast across other housing tenures, affordable housing, later life living, and build to rent. Westminster may have only just discovered the North, but we are already the people who know how to invest there. And in the Midlands, and in the West, and in Wales, and indeed in Scotland. So we are perfectly positioned to leverage the expected expansion of public capital spending. Technology will continue to drive market evolution, and we continue to make strides with digital and with data. For example, in protection, but also through retail products like salary finance, intermediated mortgages, and surveying. We've added climate change as a growth driver. Climate change will simply be the defining financial challenge of our generation, with huge investment, CapEx, ESG, and stewardship opportunities, as well as risk management challenges for the whole sector. I will return to this topic with a later slide, but as Mark Carney has made clear, there will be both financial winners and losers. We intend to be the winners. This slide illustrates the strong growth and growing scale of PRT markets in the UK and the US. £40 billion and £30 billion markets in 2019, respectively. But equally, the fact that in both cases, 90% of the DB markets remain on corporate balance sheets. Market leadership in global PRT requires several characteristics which Legal & General already possesses. Actuarial and longevity expertise, asset management skill, the capacity to source attractive regulatory compliant real assets like our £4 billion investment in the world's leading university in Oxford, and the ability to execute and administer large schemes. We also have the ability to work with schemes on a de-risking journey through LDI and potentially innovative capital light solutions towards full buyout, as our recent AIB transaction illustrated. This is solving the issue that consolidators are trying to address. This slide is a new disclosure, enabling you to see the strongest growth areas by product, by geography, and by channel as we diversify LGIM's expansion and lean into globalizing asset markets and growth. Compound growth in the high 20 and 30% ranges in multi-assets, the US, Europe, UK, DC, and through international channels illustrate the increasing breadth and depth of our coverage and our ability to win mandates. LGIM is more diversified than is generally recognized. Index at only 404 billion is a third of our AUM. LDI is an obvious step, as Jeff highlighted, on the path to buyout, and indeed the majority of our PRT business comes from existing clients. 60% plus by number and 90% plus by volume in 2019. Multi-asset funds are aligned to grow with the expected growth of DC, and more than 90% of our AUM is external. We have 100 billion of internal funds, mostly annuities, or nearly 80 billion excluding mature savings, which is shortly to be sold. That's only 7% of total AUM. Kerrigan has updated you on LGC's growth at recent results presentations. The division continues to make strong progress, now with 2.9 billion in diversified direct investments, and it's on track to achieve 5 billion in the next 3 to 5 years. We are building a number of alternative asset businesses across 3 broad asset classes. That's future cities, housing, and SME financing. In housing, for example, we have a diverse range of businesses which provide solutions by life stage, by affordability, and by tenure. These include affordable homes, later life living, and build to rent. Our alternative asset businesses are at various stages of profit maturity, as shown on the slide, and therefore have significant future growth potential. We're also building them to attract LGR funding and third-party capital. This year, as we said earlier, we are formally adding climate, specifically the challenge of addressing climate change, to our strategic growth drivers. This is where our combination of profit and purpose can combine to the greatest effect, and where we can mobilize the skill and enthusiasm of our best people to produce inspiring results. As you will see when we publish our TCFD report next week, we start from a strong base and are making real progress. Among the scale players, LGIM is rated as a leader in ESG investing. We haven't just discovered this. We were pioneers in the field, in the E, in the S, and the G, and we're further strengthening our analytical and product capability. But also, where we invest our own assets as a principal, we are using the investment capability of LGC to back new technologies, for example, in photovoltaics, electric vehicle charging, and upstream energy management. We'll also set new market-leading carbon standards for the house building industry through our housing businesses. Transitioning power generation from hydrocarbons to renewables, like on or offshore wind, involves a transition from OPEX models to CAPEX models. The cost is upfront, and the investment is long-term. This is highly suitable for debt capital market financing, and where the technology is established and the economics proven, as in wind, highly suitable for LGR's annuity portfolio. We have already 1.3 billion of renewable energy assets in the portfolio, but all of us, institutions and individuals, have to step up. What the finance sector has done collectively so far has not slowed the pace of global warming. We all fall a long way short. The stakes are high for the planet, but also for business, and the financial sector. Addressing climate change is therefore the next consistent step in the delivery of inclusive capitalism. Our track record since 2011 is very strong. From 2011 to 2015, we delivered 10% annual growth in EPS. Then we set out our ambition for replicating that growth from 2015 to 2020. We have achieved the current goal in 4 years, not five. Our growth in operating profit, ROE, EPS and DPS and book value has been achieved through a period of serial changes and challenges. We've had Solvency II, pension freedom, law for longer rates, Brexit, and various political instability. But despite concerns around each of these at the time, none of them have dented our ability to deliver good business or eroded customers' trust in our brand. Legal & General has shown itself to be not just a highly resilient business, but one that is quick to adapt, to change, and to evolve. The latest challenge is now coronavirus. So far, there's been no direct effect on our business. Our exposure to the most exposed sectors is very small, and our balance sheet, as Jeff has explained, is strong. We have ridden through previous challenges precisely because of the consistent relevance and application of our strategic macro drivers of growth and the capacity of our people to execute that strategy effectively. This remains the case today. Despite the effect of the virus on markets, we are now emerging into a period of greater political stability in the UK, and the government's economic and policy direction, as well as markets and public sentiment, is increasingly aligned to the inclusive capitalism programme we have been pursuing for almost a decade. Having done 5 years' work in 4 years, we do not intend to spend the next year resting on our laurels or coasting. In the autumn, we will set out our ambitions for the next phase of our development for you. Headlines will include how we intend to build on our global leadership in pension de-risking for corporate clients and retirement income provision for retail customers, how we accelerate the deployment of patient capital to improve the built environment, investing in our cities and infrastructure, how we grow, diversify, and modernize to become a world-class global asset manager, and how we deploy data and digital technology across our whole insurance and investment infrastructure. In summary, how we build on our established strengths to become more international, more technology focused, and most importantly, how we'll rise to the challenge of the era, financing transition to low carbon and in delivering inclusive capitalism. Jeff and I are now very happy to take questions, and as usual, our senior management team is here to pick up the really difficult ones. I'm going to start from the front this time. Andy.
Thanks. It's Andy Sinclair from BofA Securities. Three from me as usual, if that's okay. Firstly, on LGIM, you've given some pretty confident outlook on the flows pipeline for the US for 2020. Just wondered if you could give us a bit more colour on what you're seeing in the pipeline, what's in the mix, and what that could do for the cost-income ratio as well. Secondly, I realise you've given a Solvency II number as at 28th of February, but just wonder if you could confirm, after recent market moves in the last few days, that you're still above 170 and give some more colour. And thirdly, it was just on the annuity book. You've talked in the past about that book becoming self-sustaining in that kind of 80 to 100 billion range. You're now at 76, so getting close. I just wonder if you give some colour on the uplift to cash and organic capital generation as you get towards that level. Thanks.
Okay, I'll take the first one, and Jeff will take the second and third one. I'm not going to try and steal Michelle's thunder, to be fair. I mean, she'd love to have been here today, but sadly she had a very serious skiing accident, so she's not with us to answer that question. We've tried to use a couple of slides to give you the direction of travel that we're going in. Clearly, we're delighted with the success that we've had in Japan, breaking into China, and the continuing to have great success in the United States. I think the new asset classes that we've been entering into for real assets are going to help LGIM. That'll help drive more revenue and more profits going forward. We're very happy with multi-assets and the way that's aligned with the DC business. Clearly, LGR is a great driver as well for LGIM. The bigger it gets, the higher quality and the longer the returns, longer revenue streams that LGIM receives. So we're very happy with that. I think the cost-income ratio has risen, as you pointed out, for two reasons. I think underlying costs have risen in the business, and they've been a little bit ahead of where we've expected. Michelle will address that when she presents. And as Jeff mentioned, we've still been investing in the business to create this global business. And I expect that investment to continue over the next 2 to 3 years. Jeff, do you want to take two and three?
Yep. It really is the hot seat there. That screen is boiling. That's why I sat over there. Solvency II now. Yeah, I mean, even with the most recent movements, you're talking a 1-2% movement. So we're well over 170. We continue to monitor it. There are many offsetting impacts: equity, rates, spreads, inflation. So they all are in the mix around that. It's never as simple as you all know, as just following our sensitivities. So we're comfortable with that. We're in a strong position, and we monitor it regularly. Annuity self-sustained. I have talked about this quite a bit. That definitely stands, but is borne out by our planning. When you're at certainly 90-100 billion portfolio, then that business covers the strain for sensible levels of volume in line with our ambition, the 40-50 billion, and also covers its contribution to the dividend. And so, you know, that is something we're aiming at with that 40-50 billion. We'll actually give more detail on that probably in the Capital Markets Day. We'll share more on what it looks like, some of the dynamics, etc.
Andrew?
It's Andrew Crean. Can I ask three questions, one slightly indelicate? Firstly, LGIM, when are you going to reaffirm the 8% to 10% growth target, which was mentioned a couple of years ago? Following up on that question, Jeff, or the last question, when you talk about covering the strain and its contribution to the dividend, what are you talking about new business strain? Is that at 100% or something like 150%? And what is the contribution to the dividend? And then thirdly, the indelicate one, your base mortality improvement was about a 1% improvement. With coronavirus, are you doing any scenario testing, or can you give us any scenario testing for potentially what that could do? Because certainly its death rate at the older ages is a lot more than at the younger ages.
Yeah. I'll say a little bit on the last question, and I'll go through it. I think, to be fair to Michelle, she's not here today, and I think she's got a very long and worthy presentation, which you're all going to get at some point when she's back to Worth, when she'll go through the whole strategy for LGIM. On the whole issue, it is quite interesting from a social point of view that, you know, we've been talking a lot about people dying earlier than expected. And in our cities and towns across the U.K., you know, typically the poorest areas, people die at 58, and in the richer areas, about 85. And we've had very little social concern or much debate about that in the last 20 or 30 years. But coronavirus has sort of resulted in us getting hugely interested in this particular topic. And we've agreed an enormous, and I think the largest private sector partnership with Edinburgh University to do a huge amount of research on this very important topic as to why people are dying much quicker than we all expected. Indeed, you know, all of my brilliant actuaries that sit in this room got that one wrong. And I'll let Jeff answer the really technical questions that you asked as well, Andrew.
Yeah, the self-sustaining point, yeah, I mean, that's not at the 4% level. That is holding a sensible solvency ratio. And so that's what we factor in there. That is fully financing itself. And equally, you know, on the dividend, it's our own current projections on the contribution, what it has been historically, what that business has been contributing via LGAS, and our views on how we want that to grow over time. Obviously, there's a whole load of variables: what level of strain, what mix of business, what volumes, and that's why we will need to give a bit more colour in a future presentation.
Oliver?
Oliver Steele, Deutsche Bank. The slide, Jeff, you showed about the solvency ratio over the last 4 years holding pretty steady, or actually I think even moving up slightly over that period. That has benefited in the last few years from a number of disposals, quite a lot of management actions. And I suppose linked to the question that has been asked already about the self-sustainability of the annuity book, I mean, you're talking here about 40 to 50 billion over 5 years, which would actually imply slowing growth in the annuity book. So I'm just wondering, should we then assume slowing growth in that respect, or do you have levers to pull that can enable you to grow faster than that 40 to 50 billion? That's question one.
Yeah.
Sorry, a bit long.
Yeah, I might get Laura to talk about the growth of the annuity book, and then Jeff can pick up on the technical point that you raised.
We certainly see the pipeline in the UK and US, meaning that we can sort of have a very safe target of 45 to 50 billion. I will let Jeff comment on what other levers we have to pull to go above that level, but the market certainly is there in our two core markets. Our pipeline in the Canadian market is also growing, which we haven't factored into that 45 to 50.
She's doing a me, you know. It's the 40 to 50 went from 45 to 50 without anybody batting an eyelid. I've been doing that for years with the board, but sadly we've got a chairman now who notices those things and says that wasn't quite what you said at the last meeting, Nigel. Jeff.
Yeah, as I've said many times, we always have a wide range of management actions. We certainly have levers to pull. They take many, many different forms, whether they're the model refinements, etc., that we see, but. You know, more substantially, partnerships, temporary capital provision from people who are very happy to give us third-party capital, reinsurance arrangements. We have some quite innovative reinsurance structures that give us temporary financing at pretty low costs of capital. So there's always no shortage of parties wanting to talk to us and no shortage of brains to put together those structures. So, yeah, we're comfortable we can allow those different volumes.
Can I ask my second question?
three,
no, I'm going to cut it down to two. Second question is, you've said again that interest rates are economically not that important, even though they affect your solvency ratio. Given that the share price panics every time bond yields falls, can you just sort of talk us through what impact lower bond yields really has then in practice? So if it's not the Solvency II ratio that matters for you, what does matter?
I think people have always been concerned about defaults, and that, you know, for many, many years, that was the discussion here, is, you know, what's the defaults going to be, what's going to arise in the economy. Now we've had many years of low defaults, and as Jeff said, we've only had 25 million since 2007, and the provision's now 3.2 billion. That sort of disappeared from everyone's economic understanding, but it hasn't changed sentiment or perception. And when rates or credit spreads move around, our share price seems to move disproportionately. And I suspect that's not through buying and selling by people. That's much more by algorithms. And I think we all have to get used to the algorithmic trading world in which we live in now. When you go to your own rooms, there's very few people compared to what there was, you know, 10 or 12 years ago. So that's, I think that perceptions hopefully over time will diminish, and to a certain extent, no matter what we've said about it, what empirical evidence we've produced to it. The second important thing about our business model, which people forget, is we encourage people not to own BB assets. We have a system which, in fact, LGIM trades out of assets if they think they're going to go down to BB, because we don't want to lose that reputation that we've got for outstanding credit management. So we hold a lot of very good quality BBB assets, but very, very few single BB assets. And to get to be held as a BB asset, you've got to have a pretty good prospect of getting upgraded again. And Tesco's would be a very good example of that. When they got downgraded to BB, we held on to quite a large part of our Tesco holding because we had a lot of confidence in the management that they get the credit rating back up. So we have, and Simon can go into, because he's been involved with this for many years, go into the details of how we've set that up and managed it, I think, very successfully over the last 10 years. In fact, Kerrigan was around 10 years ago as well, when we were thinking through what was the best way to avoid to jump to default types of situations. Do you want to pick up the economic stuff, Jeff? Is there anything else?
it's more reiterating. Yeah, the rates itself doesn't do anything. It's discounting a very, very, very long liabilities. You get some risk margin impact. The SCR simply gets bigger. We have the same pound sterling the day after as we had the day before to pay the claims. The ratio, as you know, is reasonably sensitive, therefore, but actually the total surplus doesn't change that much in the grand scheme of things. So, no, because they've run off an IFRS model. It doesn't have much impact to that. It's much slower over time. So, you know, we don't really see that. It's the same as the non-economic effect. It's simply the accounting on the term life business where you see that coming through in the investment variance. We don't lose any money economically. We don't pay anything out of the door when those rates go down.
Good morning, John Hocking from Morgan Stanley. Three questions, please. On LGI, Jeff, you mentioned that you've had this sort of investment variance because of rates. I wonder if you could give us an update, given what's happened to the US curve recently, and given what you've just said, I'm presuming that's a linear impact rather than anything which is geared. And the second question, on the old Solvency II sensitivities, we've still got the sort of curiosity for the sector where the annuity companies have got a positive solvency impact when spreads widen. We've had about a 25 bips move, I suppose, in credit spreads. Your sensitivity for 100 bips. What would we actually have to see in spread widening before you'd actually see a negative impact on solvency? And then finally, the EIOPA risk margin changes, which came out sort of a day or so ago, which looked like sort of tapering the risk margin for long durations. Have you had a chance to look at that? And if something does change the risk margin, is that just a wash for the transitionals, or is there any sort of economic benefit to you? Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to ask Simon or Tim to take the third question and Jeff to take the first two questions.
All right. I know the answer to the third one.
The risk margin change we would expect to wash through the transitional. The impact is helpful, but probably not quite as much as we would have hoped. Not sure it's necessarily going to change the economics for the annuity business, and reinsurance will still be a preferred option.
Yeah, it's relatively small, as set out. First on the IV, yeah, it's reasonably linear, especially on Bernie's business, slightly, possibly even slightly dampened from linear in the US because they hold some assets to back it, whereas Bernie doesn't have any at all. The S2 spread, we show the sensitivity. You'd have to go well beyond that. I'd say there isn't a simple answer because it depends the dispersion between single A, triple B, double B, and what we've already seen or assumed for downgrades at that point. So it would be wrong to try and give an answer to that. I mean, Tim can talk you through some of the dynamics, if you like, because we look at it constantly. How do those sensitivities hold up? We present them to try and give the clearest picture we can within a sensible range of movement. Obviously, if we ever get beyond that, we'll update the market if we thought it wasn't appropriate to use them.
Owen?
Morning, it's Abid Hussain from Credit Suisse. Just two questions, please, if I can. Firstly, on assumption changes, can you just talk to the 390 million valuation change that's coming through the LGR operating profit numbers? I think part of it is the move to the CMI 17 tables, but there's a larger part due to the move in base tables. And I just want to understand to what extent can we assume that's repeatable going forward. So if you can just help us in terms of thinking around there, please. And then sort of related to that, the second question is on the mortality reserve release outlook. So previously you guided to around 200 million. It's a little bit weaker, I guess, in light of the latest CMI 19 projections. Are you giving any more guidance going forward?
Jeff, do you want to go?
Sure, yeah. So, yeah, you're right. The experience or the assumption changes in LGR is a combination of the 155 we talk about, so there's close to 200 million for the base table change. That is almost entirely mechanical. We've said before, we set our base table assumptions based on a rolling five-year average. We don't like to put too much weight on the most recent experience. Clearly, we were bringing in 2018 when we did that calculation and therefore dropping off 2013. And you all know that there was heavier mortality in 2018. So therefore, that flows through. We flow through. That's why it's characterized as a sort of business as usual. We did the same the previous year. It was less of a move. It depends what you see. You can already tell 2019, 2014 were quite similar, so you won't see so much. We'll see what happens in 2020 and how that compares to 2015. So it's very much a rolling average with judgment, obviously, of how is it appropriate, what are we seeing in our own book of lives, how do we think things are changing. But it's that base assumption set in a reasonably mechanical way, which is why it falls there. The one with more judgment is the trend, because none of us know what's going to happen in the future. And so, yeah, we're not going to guide yet on the number. There's a lot of work to be done on that. We definitely benefit from being a year behind. So we have now seen what 2019 does, again, mechanically to that table. It's a small change. I think it's about a month extension to the life expectancy. So we are in a strong position of being able to look at 18 and 19. And by the time we set our basis, we have a pretty good view on what's happened in 20 as well, and therefore be able to reflect all of that and certainly therefore make sure we're never overshooting without doing something wrong. We're able to see almost 3 years of tables into the future from where we are. So we'll give an update around the half year when we'll have developed our thinking. We'll have some idea as well what's playing out in 2020.
Greg. Hello. Greg Patterson, KBW. Three quick questions. One is, you mentioned you'd invested in structuring, and we've got this example of this assured payment policy. Obviously, when you bring in third parties to help with the financing, you give away a portion of profits. I was wondering how, as we increasingly bring in third-party financiers, how the PV new business premium margin would progress over time. Second question, we noted that the lifetime mortgages have come quite dramatic. Well, the sales of them have slowed, increased competition. That is a unique duration. I was wondering why we haven't really seen any impact on the margin from the in annuities, on also on the PV new business premium, given that we've seen a reduction in lifetime mortgages. And third, I wonder if you could upgrade on the downgrade sort of situation. Have you had any downgrades this year? What's the prospect for downgrades in 2020? Because obviously that's the key issue with your Solvency II ratio.
Okay. Laura, if you want to answer the first, Chris the second, and I'll do the third.
On the stage, I've been told. So the APP policy, Greg, is actually an insurance policy covering, as Jeff said, all market risk of a pension, a particular part of a pension scheme. So in that particular example, we haven't brought any other third-party financing in. It's quite a neat way, as Nigel said, of finding one of our solutions to the sort of dilemma that the consolidators are trying to address. So that was a sort of good capital light solution for us, where we didn't pass any of the financing or profits to anybody else.
Yeah, on the third party, build to rent would be another example where PGGM are our partner in the development phase. We've got a lot of expertise through all their continental efforts in build to rent. We will be using LGR to provide the debt financing for that increasingly on a go-forward basis. And LGIM also have an investment product open to lots of different institutions to invest in build-to-rent, many of whom don't want to be involved in the development phase, but actually do want to hold on to the assets over longer term. We view that as a big asset opportunity, the equity for that. Initial equity provided by LGC and PGGM, long-term equity provided by LGIM's clients, and a proportion of the financing, the long-term financing, is provided by LGR. Jeff mentioned it in his presentation, but that's kind of how it works. Affordable housing is very similar, and I suspect later life living is going to go down the same route, where we create these new asset classes through a combination of third-party equity, our own equity, funds from both the annuity businesses, and a mixture of LGC, LGR, and LGIM. These are the sort of sweet spots for us to invest in. Do you want to talk a little bit about lifetime mortgages, Chris? Okay.
Because obviously, you know, you're giving away profit. You've maxed out on longevity in terms of 90% longevity swap, so you're now going to bring in potentially third parties.
Well, I think as we've mentioned, lots of other third parties want to provide capital in different forms to this market, yeah. And we've got lots of innovative solutions because I think we all agree the size of the market is so big relative to our balance sheet. We have to come up with innovative solutions which solve the problems for clients, but also solve the issues for our balance sheets. And the number of solutions and the innovation that our team has shown in developing those solutions has been incredibly high. And I think each time we sit up and present, Laura will have yet another interesting structure for us to talk about.
Thanks. On lifetime mortgages, we could see from about Q2 onwards last year it was a soft market, and for us volume is not the be-all end-all, as the chairman reminds me on a monthly basis. We can also see from the market that we're achieving sort of structurally higher margins than our competitors, and that in itself, of course, feeds into annuity pricing and margins. So that would have been supportive in the round on margins. And I think while other people are sort of dipping into and out of the market, our focus is building a long-term sustainable business that balances in the right way between risk and margin and customer value. So that's our focus.
Okay.
Downgrades.
Any downgrades? No, I mean, the only interesting thing I think that's happened is in the BBB market in the United States, where we've seen two trends. One is that self-help by a lot of the players, including GE, AT&T, and that's proving to result in some upgrades in the United States. The downgrade has been Kraft Heinz, who, as you know, didn't execute on their plan and fell behind in terms of their plan, got downgraded, and their share price reacted very negatively to that, which we thought actually in the round was quite a positive outcome for us as a firm, and we've had no other major events. And then
it's Johnny Vo from Goldman Sachs. Just a couple of questions. I guess the trend in your asset portfolio has been pretty clear. There's been a great proportion of internally rated bonds, which has, you know, obviously supported the business, but also there's a notable increase in BBB. So can you just talk about the general trends? It's gone from 30% to 33%. So can you just talk about the trends there? And certainly if there's a dislocation in the market, should we see a change between the internal rated sort of bonds to more liquid credit within your portfolio? That's the first question. Second question is just in terms of the MA. I think at the half year, you had an MA spread of around 121 bips. It's 110. Is that just driven by spreads in the market, or was that a portfolio shift? And second thing, could you tell me what the MA spread is currently, if you have that available? And the final question is just in regards to Treasury assets. It's declined by about 500 million. I guess Legal & General Finance has that liquidity position. Has some money been injected in some businesses or investments elsewhere? If you can talk about that. Thank you.
Yeah, the third one, Carrigan will talk a little bit about what we've actually used the money for. Most of the money has actually been given to Carrigan for a number of startup businesses. He can talk about that. Jeff, do you want to answer the second one, and I'll answer the first one?
Yeah, you're right. Spreads came in, and therefore the matching adjustment went down. Spreads have gone out since then, so it'll be a bit higher. I don't have the exact number. I suspect Tim doesn't even have the exact number. But you can allow it. Basically, moves in the same way. The deduction doesn't change the fundamental spread. So, an average bond portfolio, add it on to the 110. nothing much will have changed since the year end otherwise.
Yeah, I think the long-term trends in the amount of triple B that we have is about the same. Some of the triple B is actually assets under construction, which is going to become double A assets. A lot of the government stuff is actually assets that we're constructing for them, which get rated triple B. That's the only delta, really, that from the from portfolio changes. Thank you. Sorry, Kerry. Gosh.
Yeah, just on the treasury assets, the overall cash position for the group, really. So $2.5 billion-ish cash. We've got plenty of cash there. We're always looking for interesting investment opportunities at the right time to invest. So many pluses and minuses in that figure, but the net $500 million or so invested in across our portfolio, so data centres, Pod Point at the start of the year, and then later in the year, things like the affordable homes business and later living, really as interesting areas in which to put money in the ground. And then things came out.
Can you say a little bit more about the affordable home business and how excited we are about the prospects?
I mean, a really, really interesting business for affordable homes that I think really brings to life a lot of what we're doing on inclusive capitalism. It's a very simple model of plenty of pension money looking for a home, and plenty of affordable homes need to be built. They pay CPI-linked rent, which is fantastic to back pension risk transfer deals. So with that simple model, we set up over the course of the year this ability to use pension money now invested in this business to create these affordable homes and create a great commercial outcome for people here, and also a great social outcome in terms of more affordable homes.
And it's about, 1,000 homes this year?
Yeah. So 1,000 homes this year, rapidly grown to 3,000 homes, $750 million pretty much in the pipeline in terms of those homes, and we think we can scale this up commercially pretty quickly. So very exciting.
Yeah, we think these are sort of points of differentiation between us and the competition. Yeah. I think you've got no one there, so if you Colm.
Thanks, Colm Kelly, UBS. Just on the LGAS solvency ratio, I'm just wondering if you'd mind maybe giving an update on even a broad range around that, given it's a high proportion of the cash flow. And then just secondly, on the subsidiary dividend from LGAS, it's fallen 10% year on year now. It remains at a healthy level, and clearly these things are not linear. So I'm just wondering what the decision making behind that was, and do you remain confident in the ability to grow the remittance from LGAS in line with the strong growth in annuity new business volumes? Thank you.
Yeah, I think we there isn't really a target for the internal dividends on a year-to-year basis, and we're basically using it to pay the external dividend. At one point a few years ago, we used to dividend a lot more up of it, and we have done that less. We are, to a certain extent, investing some of that in some of the areas that LGAS uses. And the LGAS balance sheet is about 20% less than the solvency ratio than the group balance sheet. It seems to hover at about that level. It might go up or down to a couple of percent either way.
This is Ashik Musadi from JP Morgan. Just one question. Now, your five-year charts are pretty interesting, but it also shows a clear trend that there is a straight line up growth in annuities and related business like LGC, which I would say is capital backing annuities. But if we think about asset management, LGI, it is not growing as fast as that. So if I fast forward 5 years, I think your annuities business will be 80% of the group. How do you think about diversification benefit that is captured in Solvency II if you keep moving one business much faster than others? I mean, do you think that you'll be losing diversification benefit? Is it already captured in past 5 years how it has moved, or the diversification benefits are still accounted at the same level which it was like 2-3 years back?
Thank you. I think I'm going to let Bernie give you a little prequel of his presentation later in the year on what we're going to do to accelerate the growth of LGI, and because you're right, we get a very good diversification benefit of it. It would be very beneficial to us if Bernie could grow a little bit quicker And he's always going to do it.
Here's how our one-to-ones go.
That's an upbeat one.
Yeah, that's an upbeat one, yeah. Now, I'm in the privileged position of being able to focus on growth. Also in a great position of being really strong in several markets. But it is mathematically harder when you're at 24% market share to be delivering the growth. The good news is we've got great positions in the US protection business, where we've got a business at scale, but with plenty of growth potential. I mean, really, their market share is 3-4%, and so it's got plenty of room to grow there. And so, yeah, I spend a lot of my time focused on how do we get that US business growing faster. And the great news there, we've got lots of technology developments just going into the market now, being really well received, and we're really hopeful for that to really lead to even faster growth from our US business. The other trend and theme is technology investment in fintech, and so investments like in salary finance, it's really closely aligned with what we do as a business. It's got a great social purpose, bringing financial well-being via employers, and you know, it's been going well, and we've got great hopes for that going forwards. And so that's a business we can help to grow, and really is great synergies in the workplace, both within Elgin Workplace, our own group protection benefits a business as well. So yeah, we've got plenty of growth to look at. I have to say we benefit enormously in LGI from fantastic diversification benefit from annuities, and it is a truly synergistic capital position, and we're trying to grow as fast as we can, but with all the usual caveats around making sure we're optimizing things and doing it in a really risk balanced way.
There are a couple of comments that I should have on that. I think the first one is each of the businesses has these adjacencies. Kerrigan mentioned the likes of Podpoint, which exists there. You know, Chris has got some care businesses, which people don't know very much about. Bernie's got salary finance and a whole bunch of other things. When we come to November, we'll talk a lot more about those sorts of things, which will help accelerate the growth. And we all, I think, share the feeling that our US businesses, all three of our US businesses, could grow a lot quicker. We've been very measured in our expansion, get the right people, get the right systems, get the right technology, build a brand, and that's been really successful for us. I wouldn't quite agree with the point that you made about LGC's fortunes being totally tied to LGR. I think there's a lot of great things that LGC is doing outside of the LGR. Yes, there's a big synergy with LGR, but there's a lot of very exciting things that you'll hear more about. In fact, there'll be a lot of releases about that during the course of this year. Two more questions. I think there's two more hands up, or three hands up. One, two.
Thanks. Dominic Money, XM BNP Paribas. I'm afraid I've got two more questions on bulk, so if that's all right. So the first is, in terms of the result in 19, it looks like new business margins on an IFRS basis were slightly higher than expectations, and maybe strain was slightly higher. I think that's consistent with insuring younger populations. Tell me if I'm wrong. And is that a trend that we're going to see? Presumably, younger populations, the value creation per pound of premium over the lifetime is higher. Second question, you've very helpfully given us some targets for growth in that business, 40 to 50 billion over the next few years. You also showed us that you actually think the market will grow, the UK market will grow in 2020. If you maintain your share of that, then actually that suggests quite a large decline in 2021 and beyond. Are you hiding your light under a bushel, as people say, in this business? Thank you.
I've never knowingly hidden my light. and I'm not dull but worthy either, which is the other headline that I seem to get associated with, courtesy of Mr. Godfrey. Do you want to just take the first question there,
yes.
Laura?
Okay. Thank you, Dom. I mean, I think it's easy to read too much into the sort of slight change in both IFRS margin and the strain. I think on balance, we definitely did one large deal last year with slightly shorter lives, but we also did some longer duration deals as well. So probably in balance, there wasn't a huge change from 2018. There was probably slightly less inflation, which we talked about this time last year. So I think we do aim to keep relatively steady on both those two metrics, and sort of right business that means that we keep relatively steady on both of them, and therefore you know, work through reinsurance and other things to make that happen. I think it is. I mean, it's a hugely exciting market for us. We have a really good, you know, sort of strong, steady pipeline. We've mentioned we have been able to write larger deals in the US last year as our balance sheet size has grown. And we are starting in Canada. It wasn't actually on the slide, but that is a sort of $1 trillion Canadian dollar market, and only sort of, I think, 5% of that market has gone to insurers so far. And it is increasing in terms of the overall levels that are going to insurers. And we have, you know, as was clear on the slide, we have a partnership with Brookfield where currently we're reinsuring, and a good, strong pipeline with them for the start of this year.
Okay, thank you. Last question.
Hi, is this on? Oh, perfect. Andrew Baker, Citi. So just two questions, please. First, on the risk margin. So previously the PRA has expressed a concern about the amount of longevity that's being offshored. Is there, with the potential change to the risk margin, it doesn't sound like it's changing your view on whether you would use reinsurance. Is there a potential risk that the PRA will change their view on how much they are comfortable with across the industry? That's first. And then second one, just on mature savings, there's obviously been a delay to that close. Is that specific to the Part 7 transfer, and what's going on there, please? Thanks.
Yeah, on the incident, I have a meeting with Sam Woods on Monday, so I'll ask him that question myself and see what he has to say about it. But it's one we've been asking for a long period of time. As you rightly point out, there's a trade-off between how they adjust it and the amount of longevity that's taken in the UK. Our preference would be for us to take more longevity in the UK. We've always said that. But unless they move the terms, and they move them slightly independently of what EIOPA is suggesting, that's unlikely to happen. Jeff, I don't know whether there's anything you want to add.
No, that's right. I mean, I think that last point is the most relevant. You know, this is very much an EIOPA consultation that's put out, which may or may not involve trade-offs against other items within there. It's not necessarily where the PRA's thinking is on risk margin, and not reflective of discussions we have around that. I mean, they have the drivers that you talk about, and who knows what flexibility there may or may not be in a post-Brexit world. Yeah.
Thank you. We'll all be around for a bit afterwards to answer any further questions that anybody has. I'd just like to say a big thank you for all of your support, all of your very detailed questions, which amazingly you've managed to conjure up in just a few hours since the release came out, and we thank you for your enthusiasm for all of that. We'll be seeing you at least twice during the year where we do the half-year results and our capital markets day in November. And a big thank you to all my colleagues for answering the questions today, but for delivering a stellar set of results in 2019. And let's hope we can do something similar in 2020. Thank you.